so many of the video game projects that I've worked on are related to IP that's also covered by film.
Right.
Like, you know, Peter Jackson's King Kong or Avatar or X-Men. And people assume all the time, they assume that, oh, so you, what, you just took the movie themes and reworked them and I want to pull my hair out. It's like, no, no. You know, I went to the source and pulled from the source material, the feelings, the ideas, the colors, the themes, the rhythms, the harmonies that I felt were the best reflection of that world.
Yeah, and that's what I really want to dig in and talk with you about, because there's so much there. So before we go too much further, let me just say, this is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm so lucky to have a chance to talk with Chance Thomas. You're right in the thick of a couple of really exciting things right now. The 10th anniversary release of your music for Lord of the Rings Online, and the big news that you have been invited to write the music for the Mordor expansion that's coming out soon. So, wow, it's fantastic to have a chance to talk with you.
Kate, it's great to be here. I've loved our little pre-conversation, and can't wait to get into some of these discussions about the projects with you.
Well, what's really must have been just so wonderful for you being brought in to write the music for Lotro was the rich world that Tolkien just created. I mean, all these possibilities with all the music from the different races and the different regions and stuff. And you know, going way back, I mean, way back in the 90s, you wrote music for a Tolkien game, Middle Earth, for Sierra Studios. And it sounds like that was really cool. I wish I could hear it, because it sounds like you couldn't.
No, you don't want to hear any of that early stuff. It was really terrible. So it's funny, because When I very first started working on J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth Online for Sierra, it was my first stab at trying to pull from a fictional resource, you know, a literary resource, let me put it that way, pull ideas out of a literary resource and turn those into music. You know, so I did all this research into the Lord of the Rings literature. I pulled out all these ideas about how music should sound in his world based on things that he wrote. And then I took a very, I don't know, you might say almost an academic approach in my first attempts to write music based on that. I tried to be very, very, I was over analytical. And you hear that in the early music that I wrote. And it just was no good. And so when that game was canceled and I went away and worked on some other things, and then I came back to writing music for Lord of the Rings a little bit later, I wasn't quite so literal in how I interpreted the things that I had pulled from the text. I was still true to them in an authentic way, but I was more musical. And the results, I think, you can hear now over the past 10 years on the music I've done for Lotro.
It sounds like kind of the same thing that happened with early music when it was first discovered and it was like really a thing. People were being really academic about it and trying to be just painfully literal with stuff. And then they realized that this music from the Middle Ages and the early Baroque was just played by people who loved it. And so they kind of loosened everything up, and it's a lot livelier now. And it sounds like you kind of went through the same thing.
I did. I had to go through my uptight phase and get that behind me, right?
Well, what I think is so interesting is that your music for Lotro is totally different from the music that Howard Shore wrote for the films. And that's, you know, magnificent in its own way, but it's for the films. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, he probably did his research too, and yet you both came to different places because of the research. So clearly it's open to interpretation, which is really neat.
I think any time that an artist approaches a creative task like bringing a world to life musically, you know, even drawn from the same source material, you're going to run that through different filters that you have, the way that you see the world, the way that you interpret things. And what I believe is, as I listen to the music that I've written based on this literature over the years, and as I then go as Howard Shore's music came along a little later and I started listening to that, I was like, oh, I get it. I love what Howard Shore has done. And his music also feels pulled from the same source material. I think it has a more of a Hollywood flavor, a Hollywood take on it. Whereas mine, although there is plenty of epic music in what I've written, it has a little bit more of a rustic feel. Is that a fair statement, do you think, Kate?
It does, especially the music that you wrote for The Shire and the music for Rohan. Really does feel like it's got that kind of handcrafted quality to it, which I just love. I think that's really cool.
Oh, thanks.
One of the things that I wanted to talk with you about, because it clearly shows how much thought you've put into this, is really defining the sound for the music of each of these races. And it's almost like, you know, the different instruments around our world, you know, an oud is a completely different animal than a Guarneri violin, just because of the landscape where it was built. And so as you were thinking about how to create the music for each of these different regions, I mean, how much of that is in Tolkien's writing, and how much did you have to use your imagination for that?
That's a great question. So when I put this style guide together back in the late 90s, I took each of the races, the elves, the hobbits, the dwarves, the men, and based on things that I had read in the books, you know, references that I could quote from, and inferences based on those references, I created what I felt were the different types of instruments that you would hear played in music that reflects the hobbits and the elves and the dwarves, different vocal qualities. So here's an example, right? The hobbits are these ruddy-faced people. Their hair is a little messy. They've got hair growing on top of their feet. You know, they like to dance around in taverns and sing. And so I thought, I'm going to infer from that their voices are raspy and merry. And as I pictured them singing, I thought, you know, the hobbit men are going to be baritones mostly, and the women are going to be altos. And I stereotyped. That's what I did. So I took a few examples of things that Tolkien gave us, and then I inferred stereotypes based on those references. Now, there are some very specific things. You know, the dwarves play a wire-strung harp as opposed to a gut-strung harp, which an elf would play. All right. There's mention, for example, it talks about with the hobbits, it talks about pipes and flutes. So how do I interpret that? How do I interpret pipes and flutes? There, you could say, oh, is that a pipe organ? Or, you know, is it, you know, the pipe of a car that you're blowing through, or a pipe like a didgeridoo? No. So I inferred from that pipes and flutes to be like an Irish flute or a penny whistle or a recorder. Mm-hmm. You know, these kinds of sounds that feel very much like Hobbiton to me.
In this episode, I'll just be scratching the surface of Chance's wonderful music for the LOTRO 10th anniversary release, but you can preview the album for free on Chance's website, hugesoundrecords.com.
And that was kind of how I approached everything, is I went to the books and I drew out what the books told us, and then I made inferences for filling in the blanks, sort of like they did with, you know, Jurassic Park gene sequencing.
Except there's no, mosquito DNA in there, I guess, right?
Well, no lives are at risk listening to my music.
During the course of the 10 years that you've worked on the music for LOTRO, you were able to take a couple of breaks because, you know, they kind of paced the expansions and stuff. And so did those breaks away from it give you a chance to kind of recharge your mental batteries or rethink your approach to the music at all?
For sure. The last big expansion that I did for LOTRO was the Rohan expansion. And it's been several years since that's come out. And I've done a lot of different things and gone in a lot of different directions creatively since then. And so now coming back for Mordor, first of all, there's just this huge enthusiasm that I have because it's like, oh, I'm going back to play in my favorite playground. And so that brings so much energy. And as a composer, you need that kind of creative energy to really inspire your writing. So there's that, you know, there's this, I've been away, I'm coming back, it's exciting. So the other thing that there is every project that you work on as any kind of an artist, you're honing your craft, you're picking up new skills. And I think that I've got new skills to bring to this latest Middle Earth score. You know, I have worked on a lot of different kinds of combat scores over the past several years, and there's a lot of fighting in Mordor. If you listen to my Rohan score, the finest music is the more open plains music. The battle music for Rohan was not fantastic. I think that the combat music that we have for Mordor is much more mature and much more well-developed and more engaging. So that's a long answer to your question, but yes, I think being away and coming back brings some definite positives with it.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, 10 years in the game industry is like a lifetime with all all the innovations. I mean, there are tools now that you didn't have when you were starting out, you know, music implementation tools and incredible sample libraries and all sorts of things like that. So it must be really fun to have all of those, you know, really literal tools to be able to use as well.
Right. And it's interesting, though, because I've never been about the tools. I mean, I use tools, right? I use tools for implementation. I use tools, obviously, in crafting my music. But to me, it's always been about finding the voice and finding the emotion. And what is it in the fiction itself that I can unravel and convey in music in a way that brings people into that fiction? Like, if you listen to the Lotro 10 soundtrack album, my guess is not one time did you think about technology. Am I right?
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. So especially a world like Tolkien, where it is so organic and Middle Earth, you know? I mean, you just want to sink your fingers into the thick, rich soil when you hear that phrase, Middle Earth. So I've tried to let the technology be very transparent in the scores I've done for Middle Earth so far.
I hadn't even thought about not hearing the technology, but you're right, because the end product is music. It's not a bunch of things on a computer, tracks on a computer.
Right.
There was one track in particular that I wanted to just bring up, because I love it, because Learning to Ride from your Rohan score, as a rider myself, I've been listening to it, and it's incredible how well it matches the tempo of a horse cantering.
So, right?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And it gives you this sense of freedom and just getting across the landscape really quickly. And so I was wondering if you watched videos of horses when you were working out the tempo, or was that just an internal thing that you just knew?
That's funny. We almost didn't even do that piece of music in the score. It wasn't originally contracted in the score. And I was talking with one of the designers, and he was telling me that there's this game mechanic where the players get their mount for the first time, and they have to figure out how to ride the horse. And so I thought, oh, we've got to have a piece of music for that. And so I just thought back to times when I first got on a horse and how that felt. And I've only been riding, I don't know, maybe half a dozen times in my life. I really enjoy it. But there is this little, you know, when you're first getting on and you're just walking the horse, there's not that much of a rhythm to it. But once you start to canter a little bit, and then of course when you gallop, those are very rhythmic experiences. And so I just remembered back to how that felt, and I'm a very emotionally based writer. Almost everything I write comes from me imagining myself in the situation that I'm going to be scoring and what emotions are generated by that imagination. And so I put myself in that situation, and this piece of music was what flowed out of that.
If I designed riding freestyles, which are a thing now for dressage, I would totally use that because it's such a perfect fit. It's really great. And speaking of emotion, the thing that just really struck me with Rivendell were not only the sounds that you added, the birds and the water, but that melody, that waltz, there's so much longing in it, like maybe for the way Rivendell used to be before the darkness came. I'm not sure.
Right.
I was just wondering what you were thinking about when you wrote that.
There is a lot of longing and yearning in Middle Earth. And when I wrote Rivendell, I specifically wanted to convey this idea of it's glorious now, but it used to be even something better. And there is a little harmonic trick in music that gives that feeling of, you know, tug and release, tug and release. And so I thought, well, I wonder if that would work for this. And it turned out to work pretty well.
And that's exactly what I picked up on because, you know, when you imagine it from the description, you can really tell that it did used to be just this really amazing, magical place.
And that's interesting. Now, hearing you say that makes me think, if you were to listen to Rivendell, that piece of music, it's like you're hearing someone tell a story of the good old days.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
This is how it used to be, and there was this, and there was that, and it was glorious and beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, as you say, that kind of pervades all of Middle Earth because, you know, we arrive there at that moment where things are really about to change, and the drama is really amazing. And
do you think there's some of that same kind of wistful longing and yearning in the Rohan theme?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
what it reminded me of, the Rohan theme, there's this Tuvan ensemble called Hun Hurtu, and they're they're Tuvan throat singers, and they're right on the border of Mongolia and Russia, and there's that same kind of quality. They do throat singing, and their songs are about horses, but a lot of times they're about horses they love that have died, or the culture has changed. I get that same kind of feeling with the music for Rohan.
There's a nobility to it, but there's also a little bit of a mourning and a longing, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. You've described these places so well in your music, and you have spent more time really kind of immersing yourself in the world of Middle Earth than anybody else I know. And I'm wondering if you've got a favorite place that you think about visiting, that you, if you could actually visit anywhere in Middle Earth, where would it be?
Oh, so if Middle Earth was a real place,
yeah,
and you could
yeah.
get there tomorrow, you know?
Right.
Charter a jet or whatever. Wow. A lot of them. I'd love to go hang out in Lothlorien. I'd love to see Rivendell. I'd love to visit the Shire. I would love to go to Helm's Deep and walk around that ancient fortress. How great would it be to stand on the white towers of Ithilien and look out over those plains of Gondor? So many interesting places. And there's a place that I've just learned about, a castle, Saragost, which is in Agarnaeth, which is a suburb of Mordor. And the castle, as the game team has designed it, it's sinister, but it is one of the most beautiful pieces of architecture, you know, I've ever seen. I'd love to visit there when Lareth is not at home. So many places I would love to see if they were real. And honestly, I've seen them in my mind's eye as I've read through the literature. And of course, you know, the game brings a lot of those places to life in visual realization. The films have brought a lot of those places to life with visual realizations. Yeah. But if I had to narrow it down to one, I don't know, Kate, where would you go?
I don't know. It's tough. I mean,
it's tough.
Yeah, you're right. They need like a Middle Earth package tour so you can do the stops once a day.
maybe we could go jet skiing at the Grey Havens.
Sure, why not?
Thank you.
you mentioned the team and the castle they're designing and all the other stuff that I know they're busy working on. With the relationship that you guys have, I mean, you know so much about Middle Earth. Have you ever had discussions about who's right, whose interpretation is right for a particular place?
No, because Chris Pearson, who works for Turbine as their lore master, he puts everybody to shame. I mean, the guy is a walking, talking Tolkien encyclopedia, and he's a fabulous resource. I have often turned to Chris when I'm looking for lyrics to craft for the choirs to sing, and he's the guy. There's no competition. No competition.
Wow. Well, speaking of lyrics, that was another thing I wanted to ask you about, because obviously these choruses have to have words to sing, and so is there like a Tolkien dialect coach that comes in and teaches them how to sing in Elvish or Dwarvish or Orc or whatever?
So what I did early on is I would go to Chris and I'd say, here's what I'm thinking of. Actually, even before Chris, I found on the internet there were some pronunciation guides. So when I wrote, for example, the Song of the Dwarves, and they're singing things like Baruch Kazad, the axes of the dwarves are upon you, you could find those phrases in the literature, and then you can go online, and there's lots of sites that tell you, you know, how they're pronounced. And so you just check three or four of those sites and make sure that you've got consistent pronunciation in all of them, and then that's how I would instruct the choirs. When I did the Rohan score, I wrote most of the lyrics, I think maybe all of them, in Old English.
Oh.
And Chris connected me with an Old English professor at a local university there in Boston. And so I would put out ideas, and he would give me all these different words in Old English with the pronunciation, and I would take them and I'd kind of piece them together. If somebody from that era, like the 1500s, 16, I don't know what era it is exactly, but if they were to listen to it, it might not sound exactly right. we were close. I mean, we got words that fit and conveyed the right meaning. It's pretty nerdy, but I didn't want to just sing syllables. I wanted to actually sing words that had meaning for what that song was about, so that if anybody were to go and deconstruct the song and really go look up those lyrics, it would actually make sense.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I wonder, writing lyrics in, say, Elvish or Dwarvish, does that affect the rhythm of the melody too?
So what I would do is I would write the piece of music first with just syllables, you know, and work out how I wanted the choir to sound, you know, how I wanted the shape of the vocal line to be. And then, like with Mordor, what I did was I went to Chris afterwards and I said, okay, for this song, this line, I need one word that has two syllables. I need another word that has three syllables here, and then a word after it that has one syllable. And this is the overall meaning that I kind of want to convey. And so he would go in the black speech and he would find what words fit the syllabic pattern and also conveyed the meaning. And then we just worked those into the score and the singers would sing those words.
Wow, that's incredible. Not quite the way Rodgers and Hart worked, I guess.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We do what we can.
We've had a little taste of your music for Mordor in the Lotro earlier scores, the chant for Sauron, which has this weird kind of unnatural and sort of twisted metal sounds going on in it, and the really grim chorus. Is that kind of what you're thinking about for the music for this Mordor expansion, or are you taking it in a different direction?
So that theme that we have in the chant for Sauron shows up in a few places in the score, but the instrumental palette is greatly expanded in the Mordor score. There are, you know, there's a lot of big choir singing in the new score, but wow, if the palette for Chant for Sauron were described numerically as, you know, 1 through 5, the palette for the Mordor score is like 1 through 60.
Wow. You know, you tend to think of Mordor as being this sort of monochromatic place, and yet it's not, because it has these different areas, and that must be a really interesting challenge then, to kind of depict all of those different places and different emotions and levels in the music.
Yeah, Kate, I had the same idea that you did when they first approached me about doing the score for Mordor. I thought, what is there to score? You know, there's the black gate and everything is black and ugly, and it's like, you know, just give me some charcoal and I'll turn that into music. But as I got into reading the design, there's all these different areas within Mordor that are specialized. You know, this is where they had the big battlements and the giant industrial machines that would make the weaponry. Okay, and here's a place over here where they would concoct the diseases, and, you know, that has its own flavor, and this has its own feel. And there's these various warlords who are now vying for power and political influence now that Sauron is gone. You know, who's the king of the hill? And it is definitely not monochromatic as you and I initially thought, but it is a rich and diverse place with all these interesting characters and places and landscapes. And, you know, you've got Shelob and all of her offspring, you know, in one part of the world, and you've got boiling lava pools and steam shooting up through cracks in the ground in another place, and you've got Barad-dûr, which is, you know, partially been destroyed, but part of it is still there, and who's in it? Who, you know, there's just all
wow.
this new stuff to explore, which I never even thought about until I got into the game design.
Oh, that's so cool. And you're right in the thick of recording the music for it now, right?
Yes, we've just finished. All of the recording is done. We're in the editing phase right now. We'll start mixing next week. And hope to deliver soon.
Yeah, well, I think it's really cool that you were part of this to begin with, because, I mean, I think we can honestly say that you're brought back by popular demand, because there was like one fan who just wouldn't stop saying to the team, you got to have Chance to do the music.
Patrick Palmer from the UK, man. He went out on change.org a few years ago and started a petition. And that was one of the most touching things that I've ever experienced as a professional, was to go and read all of the things that all these people who signed that petition said about how the music influenced their experience in the game. And wow, incredibly touching.
Yeah. Well, Chance, oh my gosh, it's been so much fun to talk with you about this, and I can't wait for the Mordor expansion and to hear this incredible music that you've been describing. So thank you so much.
Kate, it's been great to talk to you. You sound like a real fan of the literature yourself.
Yeah, I am. I discovered it one rainy summer. I was, I don't know, like 12 or 13 or so, and we were up at a cabin, a Norwegian-inspired cabin up in northern Wisconsin in Door County, and it just sucked me in. I mean,
it's hard to put down once you get into it.
My conversation with Chance and the music I included in this episode has made you hungry to hear more. He's put a free preview of the LOTRO 10th anniversary album on his website, hugesoundrecords.com.